Good morning. I'm Kathleen Tenona. Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan, Kansas. We welcome you to this progressive community, one without a creed, but with a conscience to embrace diversity, social justice, humanity, and the spiritual journey. We welcome you if it's your first time or if it's your 50th time. Please stay, and we invite you to have coffee with us after the service out in the narthex. I would especially like to welcome Reverend Eric Banner this morning. Eric grew up in this fellowship. That's right. Eric grew up in this fellowship in the heart of Kansas, and I recently had the privilege of attending his ordination into the ministry. Eric has spoken at this pulpit in the past, but now it's official. His ordination was a wonderful, moving, and joyous occasion, and I look forward to listening to him today and in the future. And just a little business. Please refer to your morning's order of service. There's some announcements on the inside, and let's get started.
We come together this morning to remind one another to rest for a moment on the forming edge of our lives, to resist the headlong tumble into the next moment until we claim for ourselves awareness and gratitude, taking the time to look into one another's faces and see their communion, the reflection of our own eyes. This house of laughter and silence, memory and hope, is hallowed by our presence together. Rose, would you help us out? Each and every time we gather in worship in this congregation, we light the chalice to remind ourselves that though we did not start the fire, we are called to tend it in our day. We bring our lives and our work to the work of this world, lighting a chalice to remember always that time is fleeting and precious, burning away while we live our lives together. If you would please rise in body or spirit as you are willing and able, and join in singing hymn number 360. It's "Here We Have Gathered." Young and young at heart, join Kathleen at the front for just a moment.
Thanks. You guys hear me? Okay. Has anyone read this story before? Wemberly Worried? Yeah, it's a good one. Okay. Wemberly worried about everything. Big things, little things, and things in between. Wemberly worried in the morning. She worried at night, and she worried throughout the day. "You worry too much," said her mother. "When you worry, I worry," said her father. "Worry, worry, worry," said her grandmother. "Too much worry." At home, Wemberly worried about the tree in the front yard, and the crack in the living room wall, and the noise the radiators made. At the playground, Wemberly worried about the chains on the swings, the bolts on the slide, and the bars on the jungle gym. Soon, Wemberly had a new worry, school. Wemberly worried about the start of school more than anything she had ever worried about before. By the time the first day had arrived, Wemberly had a long list of worries. What if no one else has spots? What if no one else wears stripes? What if I can't find the bathroom? What if I hate the snack? What if I have to cry? She worried all the way there. While Wemberly's parents talked to her teacher, Mrs. Peachum, Wemberly looked around the room. Mrs. Peachum said, "Wemberly, I think there's someone I think you should meet." Her name was Jewel. She was standing by herself. She was wearing stripes, and she was holding a doll, too. "This is Petal. This is Niblet," they introduced their dolls to one another. Petal waved, Niblet waved back. Throughout the morning, Wemberly and Jewel sat side by side and played together whenever they could. Petal and Niblet sat side by side, too. Wemberly worried, but no more than usual, and sometimes even less. Before Wemberly knew it, it was time to go home. "Come back tomorrow," called Mrs. Peachum as the students walked out the door. Wemberly turned, smiled, and waved. "I will," she said. "Don't worry." So sometimes, you guys, we get worried like Wemberly, don't we? But we find a safe place, we find a friend, something that comforts us, right? Do you know this place here? I hope this community is safe and comforting for you. And there's somebody that works really hard to make it a safe and comforting place. And I just want to tell you guys that this week, Sandy Nelson, who was the interim DRE, is now the real DRE. And we're very excited. Very excited. The board's really excited. And I know all you guys are really excited. And we're just excited about that. So thanks, Sandy. So why don't you guys go back to class with Sandy?
Each and every week, we gather in community and we gather to share our lives. Our lives are filled with moments of great joy and burdens that weigh on our hearts. We gather as a community to share in the stories of our lives, those who have a great joy, a personal sorrow, to share with this gathered community today may do so at this time.
Hi, Anna Franklin here. I'd just like to ask you all to hold Tom Page in your thoughts, Katie Kingery Page's father. He's been in and out of the hospital with urinary problems and bladder problems, and it seems to be pretty serious. So, talked to Katie this morning, and she said she was with her father last night at the hospital, so she's going to stay home today. So, thank you.
Our original coffee meeting place is open again, so we will meet there tomorrow morning and see what we think.
I just want to say and embarrass Eric here that he and his family are passing through on their way to Denver, where they will have a more or less permanent existence, finally.
Yeah, I'm Kathy Hedge, and I just wanted to let you know that I just finished editing my first professional for someone edit a professional book, and we're going to have a party in Los Angeles on the 17th of August. So, yay, it's exciting.
And we know also that there are those joys and sorrows that remain silent and in our hearts. Hold each other gently, and join me for a moment of silence as we hold those concerns that have been raised in our hearts and send our best wishes to Tom for quick healing, for Katie for strength, for all those who need it. The air conditioning that has just turned on, this building, this community is not possible without your financial support. We will now gratefully receive this morning's offering. Please give, and give generously. Thank you.
This morning I'm doing a reading from John Buren's The Changing of the Foundations. Everything is in process. Even the seemingly solid bedrock of Earth has gone through enormous changes since it was star stuff, then magma. Nor is reality quite as the ancients saw it, changing combinations of earth, fire, water, and air, or spirit. Nor is it made up chiefly of mass and space, as in Newtonian physics. What seem to us to be things are just packets of energy, related for a time. They are events, actual occasions. So are we. Any metaphysics or theology for today must reflect that reality. All creation is an event. Too often we are self-involved, failing to notice, or worse, we are actively destroying our connection with our fellow human beings and with the holy. We are here to abet creation and to witness to it, to notice each other's beautiful face and complex nature, declares Annie Dillard, so that creation need not play to an empty house.
Would you join and sing just one more time, hymn number 391, Voice Still and Small.
Still and small, deep inside all, I hear you call, singing. In dark and rain, sorrow and pain, still you remain, singing. Calming my fears, quenching my
It has indeed been storms and rain this weekend. I imagine that with all these storms and rains, none of you were out yesterday hiking the trails at Konza Prairie. But if you had been, if you had gone to Konza Prairie yesterday, you would have crossed two bridges. Now, the first one is the one that goes over that little slough. Do you know the one I'm talking about? I see the heads nodding. The one that always seems to inspire at least one joker to sort of bounce a little bit, even though the sign says you shouldn't. But if you make it over that first bridge, you get to the second bridge, the bridge over King's Creek. And it is that bridge, that second bridge, I want to talk about this morning. Now, some of you will know this, and some of you have never gone out to Konza Prairie to go for a walk. And if you haven't, I recommend it. But if you've never been there, you'll just have to trust me that there is indeed something very special about that second bridge. You see, that bridge moves. Not up and down like the first one, at least when I'm on it, though it has some give that way. It moves instead in an entirely different way. It swings. And it can swing that way because it has hold on something that keeps it from being washed away. Once upon a time, that bridge wasn't there. They built a bridge that they thought was solid. And then a storm came and caught it and washed it away. They thought it was a one-time event, and so they built the same bridge back. You done this in your life? But it happened again, just a few years later. Now, if you have lived here for very long, you know that this is a place of extremes. And I am not talking about the legislature. This is a place where the weather and the very ground beneath our feet is amazing and strong and sudden. When a fierce storm comes blowing through, it drops a pile of rain on these thin upland hills that we call home here. And they shed their water quickly. It pours down the valley. It floods through these streams. It moves everything and anything in its way, rocks and trees and fish, and yes, even small bridges. Bridges like the one that used to be there. The first time that bridge got washed away, they went out and they rebuilt it. But the second time, they got wise. They knew at that moment that they could rebuild that design that didn't both know how to hold on and to let go. Or they could watch and learn. They could do something differently this time. And so they did. They made a bridge that moves. When you walk on that bridge, it seems to be pretty solidly anchored, and it is. I assure you, you will not fall off. I've done it many times. But it is only anchored at one end. It's built on a series of platforms, one on each side of the creek, where it rests. But on one end, there is something extra. There is a cable tied to that bridge, and that cable is tied to a pole that is buried deep, deep, deep into the ground. And every few years, a storm comes through, the waters rise, the bridge gets washed off of its moorings, but not washed away. The water and the rocks and the branches and everything comes barreling down. The bridge is lifted off. The flood recedes and a tractor is sent out and puts that bridge back in its place. The people who built that bridge know something. They know something I think that we all actually know, but forget from time to time. That if we are going to be people who move, then we also have to have something that holds us when times are tough. An anchor that holds us when the floodwaters come. We know we need something to cling to because the world changes. Even the earth beneath our feet, as John Buren said in this reading this morning, is itself always changing. Our lives are always changing. We know that sometimes this change is a gradual thing. The steady rain that wears down the mountains until they are just a set of hills, like the ones this church is built on. Sometimes it comes like a prairie flood, a flash storm that barrels down the creek bed, rising out onto the and over the banks. And sometimes it comes with all of the shakings of the foundations of an earthquake. But we all know. We all know, as the geology t-shirt says, shift happens. Change happens. Now, you have probably heard it said that you can never come home again. And though I spent last night sleeping in the house that I spent most of my childhood in, that house is not the same as it once was. It has changed. And neither is this place the same as it once was. Each time I come back and I look out and I see that I can walk down the halls. I can stand up here with the best view in the house and see so many faces I know and love. And so many lovely faces of people I have yet to meet. I grew up in this congregation. My mother serves on the board, and when we're in town, we see people we know and love. But we also see people we've never met. And it's a good thing. This is not the congregation that my wife and children and I moved away from 3 years ago when we headed off to California. And then Oklahoma. Old faces have passed away or moved away. Those that we remember in our hearts each week when we gather. It's why they say that you can never come home again. It's because home is never the same. Not if it's living. Living things move. The parent of any young child will tell you that living things move. Every pet owner who has a cat that somehow manages to find your keyboard just as you're typing knows that living things move. Living things move like this church and like this free faith of ours. So this morning, then, I take my message from this old quote from Louis Fisher, Universalist preacher and scholar. In a message to the seminary students he taught, he once said that he was often asked about Universalists. He was asked what Universalists stand for, and he said that the only true answer he could give was that Universalists don't stand for anything. They move. And if he was right then about his faith, about our faith, then I think he's just as right today. We pride ourselves on being a faith on the move. And we pride ourselves on the twofold meaning of what Louis Fisher said. First, that we are not beholden to some kind of second-hand tradition passed down without examination or consideration. We are instead constantly seeking anew that connection with the divine, that great river that we are all a part of, from which we all emerge and to which we all return. Fisher knew that instead of being tied to a doctrine or a theology or a dogma that had meaning once, 1,000 years ago, 100 years ago, a generation ago, but no longer spoke to the world around him, that Universalists too must move and have something to hold on to. To dance with the emerging world as it is, not as it was. But he meant something else too, and that what he meant was that it is not enough to just believe something. Any old fool can do that, he would have said. But if you are going to make the world that is waiting to emerge, if you are going to build something new, if you are going to make tyrants tremble, to drive back the darkness, to always support and build the goodness and love in this world, then you have to do more than just stand for something. You have to move to make it happen. We live this out in our social justice tradition to this very day. We know that our communities are not changed by something other than the dedicated hands and hearts and minds of human beings who get up each day, who go to work and raise their children and serve their communities to build the world that we dream about. If marriage equality is to be the law of the land, not just in Washington, D.C. or in Iowa, but in every hill and vale and every rural hollow of this country, it will take people moving. If we are going to do the work that's needed to make sure that every single one of our teenagers grows up, gets to 20 without being gunned down in the streets, it will take people moving, doing the work. If we are going to do any of the important work that this congregation does each and every day in this community, in this state that is so desperately in need of a liberal religious voice, then we must move. Our responsibility is to reach out to one another, to hand off to each successive generation a world that is better than the one that was handed to us, and we will move to make it happen because standing still just won't cut it. But, I say, as someone who is in the middle of moving right now, I can assure you it is exhausting. On Thursday morning, I looked at Emily in our half-packed apartment, sitting on the floor because the chairs were all gone, and I said, "My dig deep button is broken." We have been packing and piling and purging for far too long. And I assure you, one day is far too long. and we've been packing longer than that. But on Friday afternoon, we put away the last of our possessions in Tulsa, Oklahoma, where we have lived this past year. We launched this giant container, jam-packed with everything we could fit in it and then some, lifted onto a truck to be taken to Colorado, where we hope to settle down. We are excited about this move. Moving can be exciting. We are excited about this move. We are excited about my wife's new job, a professor of chemistry, a job she has been working for many years. We are excited about my new job, minister of our congregation in Greeley, Colorado. We are excited about being near opportunities that have always escaped us for lack of time and money, to go to the mountains and do things as a family we've never done. But that excitement, however real it is always tempered by the reality that first we have to finish moving. And also by the knowledge that even when we finish moving our possessions, our lives will still be in motion. It's the nature of life to move. But if we are to move, there must be something left to sustain us, to hold us when we're exhausted, when our lives feel like they are threatening to overwhelm us, when things feel more fragile and fleeting. That is part of the challenge of a faith like ours. When we promise to be a faith that moves, we must remember also that it's a whole lot easier to move when you have something to hold on to. It's much easier to move when you find that there is a source, a connection, a community, a sustenance that sustains you and holds you. Something to hold on to when instead of dancing in life's great streets, you find yourselves tossed asunder. When instead of a gentle prairie breeze blowing over the hills, you find that your life feels instead like you are in the middle of a storm, the likes of which leaves roofs on the ground and power out for thousands. If our churches, if our people are to move, there has to be something for us to hold on to, at least long enough to make it to the next calm spell. There must be an anchor that stays strong even while everything else is in motion. We know, of course, that we are not the first people to face this. This is part of the challenge of being human. But it can be hard to see at times. Hard to see in a world that's filled with both beauty out every window and violence always threatening to come in. Hard to see in a world that seems too often to treat life as though it's dispensable. So we come together. We come together as a church each week, this congregation, as an anchor in our lives. I was preaching to a small group at the very large church I spent the last year serving. And I guess I had been having a pretty busy, full week. And somewhere in that sermon, I had this reference to the church as a swirling mass of humanity. And I was gently told by a woman that I know that for some people, perhaps the church was the place they came because their life was a swirling mass of humanity. But there are days and weeks and years when it takes all that you have to just stay connected to the strength that sustains you. There are days and weeks and years when you are the strength, when it is through you that your strength and support goes to the people who need it most. Sometimes even people who you didn't realize you'd touched. Now, I know I saw Jim Chanteau here earlier, and so, Jim, I want you to correct me after the service if I have these details wrong, because I'm going to tell this story as I remember it. But years ago, I was talking with Jim's wife, Doreen, Now, Doreen had been a nurse at the local hospital for many years, and she and I were talking together that day, and she told me that earlier in the week, a woman had come up to her and said, "Thank you." She did not recognize the woman. She didn't know who she was or what she had done to deserve these thanks. But Doreen is a gracious woman, and Doreen just kindly inquired about what exactly it was that she had done. The woman told her that months earlier, she had been rushed to the hospital, brought into the emergency room, and Doreen was there. And Doreen held her hand. You see, in that moment, there were other medical professionals who knew what this woman needed. They were able to give her the care that she needed. Doreen had nothing medically that she was required to do. So as that gurney rolled down the hallway, Doreen held her hand, held on to her dignity and her identity. This woman who had gone from being who she was to being a patient had Doreen to hold on to, an anchor in the storm. We come together in our congregations, in this congregation, in congregations just like it all across the country. We come together not to affirm that some particular dogma or creed is and was and always will be true, but instead, to live out the covenant we make and hold together when it is our time to be moved and to move. To affirm that love is the spirit of this church, that service is its law, as James V. Blake put it more than 100 years ago. Now, just how we understand that love that flows in and through and from and into this church each and every week will likely differ. Some of us will call it God and say that we are indeed the hands of God in this world. Others will say it's a human spirit, a spirit of resiliency, a spirit of compassion and connection. And others will say, "I don't care what you call it, I just know I need it. I need to be part of it. And when I come, this place reminds me, it sustains me, it helps me live it, even and perhaps especially when I don't feel like I deserve it. And when I don't know what I need, and all I can do is cry out." Now, some of you are here because you need it, because you are parents and you have children whose lives and personalities seem to change, if not daily, maybe even hourly. And some of you are here because you have parents who are aging and changing, and you know where it's going. And still others of you are here because you have been one of those in need, and this place held you, anchored you while almost everything else in your life was in flux. And now you have something to give back. And you're honored and blessed to do so. Whatever your reasons for being here this morning, whatever your reasons for being here each and every week, you know, we all know, what those engineers at Kansas Prairie knew. That if we are to be, as Reverend Fisher put it, a faith that moves, not one that stands, but one that moves, there must be something to hold on to. And that, my friends, is a reason for the place like this. A place that knows and so eloquently lives out the truth that scholar Bell Hooks identified in an interview some years ago. She'd been talking about the black community she grew up in Hopkinsville, Kentucky, about how formative, how important this community had been in her life, how significant it had been to what she learned both growing up and what continued to sustain her as an adult. And then she realized something. She realized there was an addendum that she needed to make. And so she said this: One of the more important things I want to say is that it wasn't just that I grew up in a black community, but that I grew up in a caring black community. I don't want to suggest that something magical happened here because everyone was black. It took place because of what we did together. She goes on at length to talk about the way that that caring black community that raised her up was one that was connected to each other, one that took care of each other's children, one where the sharing of goods and conversation were taken for granted. And when I read it, I thought of this place, this caring community. No, this church is not some unchanging entity that will always look or feel the same each time we walk through these doors. We can all attest to that, whether you've been here 2 weeks or 20 years. But the heart will always be here if we tend it. So whether this week your life is as calm as the surface of a pond on a windless day, or whether you find yourself this week coming here and digging deep to find something, anything to hold on to while the waves crash around you, reach out to one another, hold on to one another, be with one another. For there can be no faith, no faith that moves in this world, if there's not something, someone to hold on to when everything else is dancing in the wind. What I would like to do is invite you to join me in singing a closing hymn, and then share over coffee and conversation the anchors in your lives with each other. So would you please rise as you're willing and able and sing hymn number 108.
Shame are undefiled. How can I keep?
weakness, but not the light it brings to our lives. Go into this week, see beauty with your eyes, speak truth with your mouth, hear the love that